name is Lauren Tulloch. I'm Vice President of Corporate Solutions for Copyright Clearance Center. We're excited to have so many folks joining us from publishers and corporations alike today. I'd just like to take a quick moment to introduce our speakers. Helen Malone is Director of the Information Hub at GlaxoSmithKline. She's also President of the Pharma Documentation Ring, or PDR for short. Ralph Youngen is the Director of Publishing Systems Integration at the American Chemical Society. Both Ralph and Helen have been involved in the Resource Access for the 21st Century initiative from its beginnings and have played key roles in educating the industry about the initiative. Today they're going to tell us about the outcomes of the corporate pilot and recommendations from that group. And with that, I will pass it over to Helen and kick us off.
Thank you very much, Lauren. Hi, everyone. I'm Helen Malone. I've really enjoyed being part of this important RA21 initiative, and I'd like to tell you more about the customer perspective on improving access to subscribed content. For scientists trying to access subscriptions on the move, we as an information community have long felt we needed something better than IP. In particular, the pharma industry's information community, the Pharma Documentation Ring, or better known as the PDR, is particularly interested in helping to move this issue forward. For those of you who aren't familiar with the PDR, it's a community of the heads of scientific information departments from the 28 commercial pharma companies listed on this slide. And we collaborate on strategic issues and opportunities such as the one on improved user access that we're discussing today. Back in June 2015, the PDR held a special meeting focused on authentication, which brought together PDR member companies and also industry partners. And this is what we collectively decided we would need. First of all, in terms of a solution, we thought we'd focus on single sign-on and open standards, which would enable access from both inside and outside the corporate network. Secondly, we thought we would like all publishers to adopt the new authentication standard, provide granular usage statistics, and also work together on privacy and security considerations. So these requirements evolved into three goals for the RA21 corporate pilot. Firstly, and most importantly, to improve the user login experience at publisher websites. Secondly, to explore ways to capture granular usage statistics. And thirdly, to investigate how to easily set up and maintain single sign-on with multiple publishers. These are the five PDR pharma companies and four publishers who participated in the corporate pilot. For me personally, one of the main highlights from the pilot is how well we've all worked together in partnership in such a collaborative way. So in summary, this is what we want to get to. Happy users who are able to access their subscriptions anytime, anywhere, on any device in a simple, compliant way. So I'm now going to pass over to Ralph Youngen from ACS, who will explain more about the progress that's been made. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, everyone. So I am Ralph Youngen from the American Chemical Society, and I am one of the co-chairs of the RA21 initiative. And I'd like to start by really acknowledging the role that the PDR has had in forming what has now become the RA21 initiative. And Helen mentioned the special meeting that the PDR held in June of 2015, which really was a catalyst that started this whole process. I want to acknowledge the role that CCC had then the following year, where they hosted a forum on that was called Universal Resource Access, where they pulled publishers and software providers and the pharmaceutical companies together to talk about the needs that Helen stated in terms of moving beyond IP recognition to provide access to content. A task force was formed from that initiative, and around the same time, STM, the International Association of STM Publishers, in partnership with NISO, was starting to form an effort that was called RA21, and it was recognized that we were really trying to address many of the same concerns here. So it was decided that the URA task force would become the corporate pilot of RA21, and that task force ran for about 18 months and concluded recently, and we will share with you some of the results from that corporate pilot. So from those beginnings back in 2016, the RA21 initiative has grown considerably. We now have more than 60 different organizations that have been involved. And the important part here, I think, is to note the highlighting of the colors here show the different types of organizations that are involved. So in purple, we see the members of the PDR that have been participating with us. But then yellow, you see many academic institutions that have joined the cause as well. In red, software and service providers. And then in green, the publishers that are involved. And last count, I think we had something like more than 400 people that have also signed up, either are on committees of RA21 or have signed up for the email distribution list that we have. So it does have very broad industry participation at this point. So why do we need to have RA21? Well, we know that more and more content is being consumed off of a corporate or campus network. And the little inserted graph we have here from ACS shows the trend in mobile usage over a period of time here. But we also know that the publisher pathways to access that content, we really have not kept pace with what we all experience now on the consumer web, where we can have convenient ways of logging into websites using like a Google or a Facebook account. And what we are finding, by and large, is that because of the difficulty in accessing content off when you're off network, users that are fully entitled to access content on a publisher site are just turning to an alternative resource like Sci-Hub, frankly, because it's just easier to go there and grab a PDF rather than trying to navigate the login process on a publisher site. So that's largely why RA21 has been formed, in order to establish some best practices for moving beyond that. So if you think about the ways in which publishers have tried to solve this problem in the past, the publishing industry broadly has tried to solve this problem in the past, you know that we've had VPN servers and proxy servers, and I just pulled the information page here from a site on Ohio State's library page that talks about how you would need to configure your proxy server, or talks about how you can actually copy and paste this this string and insert it into the front of the vendor's URL if you encounter difficulties. And it talks about the fact that if you're using VPN, it's not going to work. So I think this just is illustrative that this is not an easy process for our users to go through. Publishers have also tried to do device pairing in the past, where if my mobile device is on an authorized campus or corporate network, I can cache that authorization for some period of time so that when I take my device off network, I can still access full text articles while off network. And then more recently, Google has gotten into this game as well, partnering with Highwire Press to enable what's called the campus-activated subscriber access. That's kind of like device pairing in a way. If I have my laptop, let's say, on a campus or corporate network, and I am also logged into my Google account, I can basically cache those entitlements that I have from that IP recognition with my Google account, so that if I then use Google Scholar while I'm off campus, I still get access to publisher content. So it's important to recognize all of these solutions still leverage IP address recognition at their core. And also important to note that all of these require the user to do something in advance. They require some setup on behalf of the user in advance. And furthermore, the industry has grown in, there's a marketplace that's growing in the industry where other software providers are coming up with solutions to try to get researchers more convenient access to content as well. There was this article from the Scholarly Kitchen blog that talked about these access solutions like Unpaywall and Compernio and Anywhere Access. So the RA21 initiative did release a statement where we compared the RA21 approach to solving this problem with how some of these access brokers work. And the different points of comparison here are that RA21 is a privacy-preserving approach where typically these other software solutions require you to create a user account, and so they potentially have some privacy issues there. RA21 really does not store any user passwords. You enter your password on your campus or corporate network. These access brokers, not necessarily. Sometimes they do cache your password and replay them, so there, you know, could be a security risk there. It's important to note that RA21 will be free for subscribing institutions, whereas some of these other solutions are not. RA21 is a decentralized model. There's no way to track user behavior in any centralized way. And what I mentioned earlier as well, that RA21 does not require any kind of user setup ahead of time. So there is a blog statement on our RA21.org website that describes this in a bit more detail if you'd like further information. So the goals for RA21 have been to take the broad representation from these multi-stakeholder groups that we have and organize pilots, which have been concluded, and I'll talk about the results a bit from those pilots. Our remaining two goals are to continue to develop the user experience and to codify that user experience recommendations in a NISO recommended practice document. And then we also have a small amount of centralized infrastructure that will be required to support the RA21 user experience in the long run. And so we are also beginning to define the parties that would be able to support that infrastructure moving forward. The initiative has been organized in the following way. We've had the three pilots that have been working. The corporate pilot that I just talked about, that was the members of the PDR. We've had two academic pilots that explored two different approaches for implementing the user experience. And then cross-cutting work streams on privacy and security as well as user experience. These are largely finished at this point. We have a corporate pilot report that was published in September of this year that is available on the RA21.org website. We also have a report that compared the two academic pilots and the architectures thereof and gave the rationale for which of those architectures we selected to move forward with. Also, really important to note the privacy and security thread that we had. We had chief information security officers working with us to review the architecture that we are proposing to move forward with, both from a privacy perspective and a security perspective. Their report is also available on our RA21.org website. In a nutshell, you know, their findings were that the method that we are choosing to implement really does not have any significant security or privacy concerns. And then the other thread, the user experience thread, continues, and I will be able to do a demo of the user experience for you in a few minutes here. So let's talk a bit about the corporate pilot itself. We first important note is that we found that many of the pharmaceutical companies represented by the PDR they have well-established identity management practices in place, and in particular, these identity management practices are based upon SAML, which allows federated access to content, and some of these companies already procure services from third parties using federated identity management, but they typically don't do that for the scholarly communications industry. So what we did is to validate that we could, we could integrate the SAML infrastructure between the publishers and the pharmaceutical companies properly, and that was validated through the pilot. We had a number of corporate researchers that participated in user testing and really helped to develop the user experience to the point that it is today. One of the findings from there is that since these corporations have more control over all of the different endpoints, all the different laptops and desktops that their researchers use, they would like the ability to pre-populate their corporate identity provider on their own corporate machines. And we did come up with a way that RA21 would be able to support that, just to make their experience a bit more seamless. And I can show you a little bit more about that in the future. Helen mentioned strong advocation for more granular usage statistics. As I understand it, some of these companies want to be able to do some cost sharing based upon usage within their own organization. And publishers just are not able to provide that level of detail back to the corporate subscribers when everything is just IP-based. So we do have a formal specification for how that might work is under development, and I can elaborate on that a little bit more in a few slides. The other thing that we explored is the idea of forming an identity federation, which would really establish all of the different attributes that would be released from the organizations to the publishers, rather than having bilateral conversations between each publisher and each organization. And let me talk a little bit more about these identity federations, because these are very common in academia. What I pulled here, REFEDS is an organization of federations from across the globe. These federations are typically country-based, so in the United States, In Common is the Academic Federation, or the UK Access Management Federation in the UK. REFEDS notes that there are 62 countries that have federations in production, and there are 12 countries that are working on pilots right now, and the number of academic institutions represented by all those federations is somewhere around 12,000. So the good news here is that academic institutions that are a member of one of these federations, they really have nothing else to do. Nothing else is required in order to support RA21. So the really good news here is that both on the corporate side and on the academic side, this SAML-based technology is very widely deployed and therefore ready to support the RA21 user experience. So our two remaining goals for RA21 are around the establishment of finalizing the user experience and establishing that NISO recommended practice document. We have a group of publishers that are working together to provide feedback to that user experience and to ensure that there's buy-in from those publishers, that they will implement it broadly. As Helen noted, one of the real goals of this initiative is to get all publishers to implement the user experience, and so we're working hard to ensure that that is the case. We are in the process right now of documenting those best practice recommendations, and we will soon be following the NISO process for ratifying those best practices. We're also working to identify, as I mentioned, the parties that could provide the support for the small amount of central infrastructure that will be required for RA21. In this context, it's probably as you imagine, we need someone that can that is experienced in providing 24/7 high availability services. Someone that would be perceived as neutral by the publishers and librarians and federation operators. And so this is something that the initiative is working on right now to define that and to define the governance structure that would be around this this organization moving forward. Okay, so let me shift a bit to the user experience now. So I think it's really important to note that everyone working on RA21 understands user experience is extremely important, and that is really the focus of much of the work on the RA21 initiative. So the user experience that we are seeking to develop is something that is similar to what we've all experienced. Like, I'm sure you've all experienced sites like this that ask you to simply log in with an account that you already have rather than creating a new account. So I did this on my Doodle account, and it was quite straightforward. I was simply able to continue with Google and choose which Google account I wanted, and then I was logged in. And for subsequent visits, I didn't have to log in at all. It recognized me and just logged me straight through. So that's extremely convenient, but there's perhaps some privacy concerns that I should worry about here. So by doing this, Doodle learned my name. It actually pulled my picture from my Google account and pulled my email address from my Google account. And so for those that are, focused on preserving privacy, this is perhaps a concern. So in RA21, what we are seeking to do is something similar to that, where we can provide seamless access but still preserve user privacy. So I have here a very typical research discovery workflow. And we know that our researchers start with a tool of their choice. They might be using Google Scholar, as noted, or they might be using Web of Science or some other tool. But no matter what tool they choose, they're typically going to come up with a list of publications of interest, and that list of publications is going to be from multiple publishers. And if you're on a campus or corporate network, it's really no problem. You just click and you get access from the publisher site. But if you're off of a network, as I mentioned earlier, this is what is largely occurring. So what we are trying to do with RA21 is to route the user back through his or her home institution in order to get access to the content. Now, you might say, well, why is this privacy preserving? Because if I'm logging in, isn't that revealing, my identity? It's actually not, because what the publishers see as a result of that login is not the user's true name and email address, but the publishers see what are called attributes about that user. And so, as I've noted here, that the user's pseudonym might be different across different publishers, and it's just some opaque number like I'm noting here. But the other attributes that we might see are, like, you might tell us the department that the user is in, and that could be some opaque, identifier that is meaningful to you but not to the publishers, perhaps. This is also where we are implementing that specification that I talked about earlier for more granular usage statistics. We want to have an attribute here where the subscriber can actually tell us, for this particular user, I wanted you to report their usage in this group. And again, that attribute, the value of that attribute could be some opaque identifier that is meaningful to the subscriber, but not really meaningful to the publisher. But that would allow the publisher to aggregate usage and report back to the subscriber in a way that is meaningful to them. So that's another direct output from this corporate pilot that we are working on. So the RE21 user experience approach followed a pretty typical pattern of defining personas and workflows and doing a lot of prototyping and user testing. And we performed quite a number of usability tests across many countries. And here are the building blocks that we are working with as we are forming this user experience. First is some consistent visual cue that all publishers would implement to start the process that would inform the user of the ability to log in through your home institution. Next is a very smart, flexible search environment where you can find your home institution. And then the third is, once you do that one time, remember your choice so that you don't have to keep searching for your institution across every publisher, and you don't have to search for your institution across when you come back, you know, through multiple visits. So the way that this is going to work and is working, and I can demonstrate it to you, is that a user will encounter this button that says access through your institution. For the first time, when they have never logged in the past, they will have to go through that one-time process to search for your institution and log in. But then after that, the button changes. So when you go to another publisher's site or you come back to the same publisher's site, that button now has your identity provider, your home institution, recorded in the text of the button, so that all you have to do is click on that in the future and not have to go through that search process again. So at this point, I'm going to do a demonstration of the user experience. Okay, so you should be able to see a Google Scholar search results screen here. This is not a live Google Scholar. This is a prototype, a mocked-up site that we have here, but it demonstrates the user experience. So in this case, the first article here is an Elsevier article, the second one is from ProQuest, and the third is from ACS. So if I click on this first article here, I would go to the Elsevier site, and since I have never logged in the past, I see this button that says access through your institution, which I can then click on and go to this search environment that I talked about here. And this search environment is smart. So if I type Massachusetts, you know, I will see all of the different sites that have Massachusetts in their text of their name. But also, if I type MIT, because that's how I know, you know, if I'm from MIT, that comes up as well, and that is because MIT actually matches the institution's domain, where it's mit.edu. This is a live environment, and so if I click on this, I will actually go to the real MIT site, which I do not have access to, so I can't perform a login here. But if I did, I would be able to log in straight away. You'll notice that choice was then persisted in here so that it remembers it. I'm going to delete that and choose another, and I will choose one that I really do have access to. We have a test environment that Open Athens has set up for RA21, and so I will go there and I will perform a real login through Open Athens. And you can see now I'm back on the Elsevier site, and it says that I have access through my RA21 test institution here. So now watch what happens when I go back to my Google Scholar result and I go to the ProQuest site. That button has now changed. That button now says access through RA21. So all I have to do is click on that button and nothing else. I simply click and I get access to the content. In the same way, I go to another publisher, this one being an ACS article. That button reflects the institution that I log in through. I'm able to simply click on that button and I get access to the article. That is the user experience that we are shooting for with RA21. As I noted here, this is a live environment, so we have demonstrated through this prototype that it actually does work and will work with publisher sites. So let me close by saying just a bit about where we are with the remaining RA21 work moving forward. As I mentioned, right now, probably through the first quarter of next year, we are finalizing that user experience, documenting the recommended practices through, and we'll be going through the NISO recommendation practice process. Also right now, probably through more the second quarter of next year, is to really establish that the governance process and that the sites that will support that central infrastructure that's required to enable the RA21 interface. And then I think you could expect that probably in the second half of 2019 is when some publishers would start to deploy those RA21 recommended practices, and we would start to see this coming to life. So I will close there. If there are any questions or follow-up, I encourage you to visit the ra21.org website. I have the email address there of Julia Williams, who is our project director, as well as Chris Schillam and myself, who are the two co-chairs of the initiative. So Lauren,
great,
I think
thank
back
you.
To you.
Thank you so much, Ralph, and thank you, Helen. You'll see if you're attending the conference, you're welcome to put your questions in the chat, and we will take those now. While we're seeing if we get any questions in, let me just ask Ralph and Helen, for corporations or academic institutions or publishers that are interested in getting involved, what do they need to do to participate in this initiative?
Yeah, as I noted, the great news here is that with institutions that are subscribing to publisher content, if you have that SAML infrastructure already deployed, which you know is widely deployed already, there's really nothing else to do. Your users will just start to encounter this. On the publisher side, there is some work to be done. That button that I showed will have to be integrated into publisher sites. And we are going to be working directly with platform providers, Adapon, Highwire, Silverchair, you know, providers like that that provide services to publishers to help enable the RA21 interface with those publishers. And if a publisher is not using a platform provider like that, the recommended practice documentation that we will be producing and ratifying through the NISO process will talk about what you need to do in order to support RA21.
Great, thank you. Okay, we have a couple of questions that have come in. The first one is, will this technology work, for example, for abstract index content, or is it full text only?
There's no reason that it can't work for abstracting and indexing sites. And so, absolutely. And, you know, I think we hope and would encourage, you know, ANI services to adopt this same approach, because the real benefit there would be if a user logs into an ANI service using their federated account, then from that point forward, it's a seamless user experience once again. As they go from, you know, because an ANI service, you know, when you do a search there, it's going to come up with a list of articles. It's going to be from multiple publisher sites. And from that point forward, as you click through those articles, you would get a seamless user experience on those publisher sites.
Excellent. Okay, the next question is, when you click Access via Institution, does it query the SAML authentication again, or does the system periodically check the user permissions again in case the user has their permissions removed or changed?
Yeah, that's a really insightful question. So the way, as it is implemented right now, it is each publisher gets its own SAML authentication context back to the subscriber site. So the first time that, you know, as I bounced from Elsevier to ProQuest to ACS in my example, when I clicked on the second and third publishers, the ProQuest and the ACS, even though there was no login screen, The ProQuest site really did reach back out to Open Athens, you know, to that RA21 test site that I logged into, and it did check to see, okay, does this user have a session already launched? And of course I did, because I had just logged into Open Athens. And so there is that checking that happens all the time. Now, each publisher is going to have their own ability to say, how often do I do that checking? You know, on subsequent visits to the same publisher, you wouldn't go back out and check over and over again. And that could be, you know, that could live for a period of hours, days, weeks, or months, really. That's going to be up to each publisher to decide how long do they want to keep that user's session going, you know, in their own publisher's environment without going back to check the site once again.
Excellent. Okay, I got a couple of similar questions that are asking, when you're trying to access the full text, what happens if the institution does not have a subscription? Will RA21 allow the user to reach the organization's Link Resolver or some other tools, or maybe be able to purchase the article?
Yeah, and that's one of the things that we will have as a recommendation to the publishers as well, is what that should look like. You're right. If you might have access to one publisher's articles and another publisher you didn't, but they both participate in RA21, you would get that feedback when you went to the other publisher site to say, you know, sorry, it looks like your institution does not have a subscription to this content, and that publisher would then give you options from there.
Excellent. Okay. Another question is, when an institution joins the system and starts to use it, will that button be the only option the user sees on their screen?
So we know that publishers also offer other options, right? We know that publishers offer, you know, the ability sometimes to have personal accounts, which are like with their own username and password that is publisher specific. And so we are going to make some recommendations there on, you know, if you have other options like that, how would you present, you know, this access through your institution option as juxtaposed to those other options. That is something that will be addressed in the recommended practice document.
Okay, great. Someone is asking, the demo on Google Scholar, would it work with regular Google as well?
Sure, it would. You know, we're just using Google Scholar, you know, back to that question about abstracting and indexing service in general, you know, we're just using Google Scholar as an example of, you know, a search environment that, you know, produces a result that has multiple publishers in that result and then as a jumping off point from there. So, yes, it would work with any of those services.
Okay, great. And someone else is asking if it would work with IP ranges as a fallback in case the RA21 login fails, but the user's in a whitelisted range.
So that is absolutely going to be up to publishers and their subscribers to work out. I think we could likely see, especially maybe more on in academia, that RA21 is more of an off-campus solution. Where perhaps IP ranges are still sustained for on-campus access, and RA21 is a convenient method for off-campus access. And, you know, RA21 is not making any specific recommendations about whether that's a good business practice or not. My guess is that on the corporate side, as represented like from the PDR companies, they're going to want to drop their IP ranges entirely because they're difficult to manage and go with federated access and go with the RA21 solution exclusively.
That makes sense. Another attendee is asking, how does the URL that appears in the RA21 search for an organization to get that organization's SAML set up? Doesn't there need to be a URL that the company provides to RA21?
Yeah, there is. And the good news is for academic sites, that REFEDS organization that I talked about is really collecting all of those URLs for all of the, 12,000 or so academic sites throughout the globe. And so there is a system that they provide that we are definitely tied into to discover those URLs for that. For the corporate subscribers, we have manually added those corporate, the PDR URLs into that environment as well. And what we imagine here is that most publishers already have the ability to support Shibboleth through an existing platform provider where there is a search environment of some type that the publishers use in order to search their subscriber lists that would include corporate subscribers as well. This is where we are really going to be working with the platform providers to make that search function, you could say, RA21 compliant, so that if you do a search on a publisher site and you choose GSK, that would be able to be persisted, that choice would be persisted in that RA21 ecosystem.
Great, thanks. Another attendee is asking, how would an institution set up the options for the usage statistics?
Yeah, we'll have to stay tuned on that one a bit. As I mentioned, that formal specification is under development right now. And we aren't quite, I don't have the direct answer to that yet. I can give you sort of directional information there would be you would assign an attribute in your own identity system, to say, people in this department maybe get this attribute and people in that department get a different attribute. It would have to be done in your identity system to define the attributes and so that they are passed on to the publisher so that the publisher can reflect it back. So the precise method or the precise syntax for doing that is still under development.
Makes sense. Thanks. And I think we have time for maybe one or two more questions. One is, will an end user need to select the RA21 access option every time they reach an article on a publisher site?
Not necessarily. So that gets back to that question about how long a user session lives. After the first
right.
time I click on that RA21 button, if I go back to a publisher site a second time, the user experience then is going to be just like IP recognition. I already have a session. I just simply get access to the content. So it really, that goes back to that question about how long publishers choose to keep the authentication session alive.
Excellent. And I think the last question is whether there will be a fee for corporations once the service is rolled out more proactively.
We do not anticipate any fees for subscribers in any way. No, this would be a publisher-supported endeavor.
Excellent. Okay, I actually got one more. Someone is wondering whether you, Ralph, or someone else from RA21 will be attending ALA midwinter to provide an update and continue the discussions.
I think our outreach committee has submitted an abstract request for ALA. I will check on that. I'm actually not sure, but I know that we are absolutely targeting the librarian community to get the word out. So I will check on that.
And we'd be happy to provide an update on that when we hear back. I just want to take a moment to say thank you again to Ralph and to Helen for their presentations today and for answering all those questions. It was a very informative session, and we appreciate the time they spent. Thank you for joining.